Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You will also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club, and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Hi there, welcome to The Big Interview. I'm Graham. Today's guest is Darren Anderton, an exceptionally talented two-footed footballer whose influence on every team he played with during the 90s, I think, is vastly underrated. A real talent. But he spent most of that extremely successful career playing for Spurs in England. In this first part of our interview, we'll focus on what people like to call his origin story. If you've been listening to the Big Interview series for a while now, you'll already know how much we enjoy these stories about how the wonderful footballers or coaches or presidents or actors or comedians get their break, where they come from, what shapes them, and who shapes them. For Darren Anderton, it's really fundamentally about one man, his dad. This was the guiding voice in Darren's life and his career. But Darren explains with some detail that life was difficult for his dad, who was Scottish from Motherwell. In fact, did you know that not only could Darren have played for Scotland, he very nearly did. Anyway, it was Darren's dad's phone call to Portsmouth saying, "I think my boy can play a bit and you should check him out," that put our guest today on the road to greatness and on the road to a little bit of bother. For those who aren't initiated, there's a bigger rival than Scotland, England, where Darren had to choose and was happy with his choice. And that rivalry is Southampton and Portsmouth. I'll let him explain. It's my great pleasure to introduce somebody who speaks with colour and passion and articulacy about a career well spent, Darren Anderton.
Listeners, we love you. There have been 20 million over you over the what's nearly now 6 years of The Big Interview. I'm in the lucky position to express real enthusiasm, natural, unbridled enthusiasm. You all know me for that, because we choose our guests really carefully, and the guest has to mean something to us. And therefore, I say again today that we're pretty privileged, because we're about to talk to an exceptional footballer, a man of high achievement, of high skill, a real clear, visionary football brain, and also somebody who's nicking around in another part of the world now, so he's got out of his scratcher at a very early hour. I'm pleased to welcome Blair Pompey to The Big Interview. Darren Spurs and England legend, Darren Anderton. Darren, good morning.
Good morning.
Darren, you're a little bit aware of what we do in this, and I have to start the interview by telling you that I'm mad as hell. It's qualifying for the Qatar World Cup time, and Scotland's opponents, Austria, have named a 43-man squad. They genuinely have named a 43-man squad.
Didn't know they had 43 players.
Whether they do or they don't, the squad has been named on there. And they say it's to do with some of the Bundesliga stars might not be allowed to come over. But I know it's fear. It's pure fear at the mighty Scotland. I know you're in great nick. I know that you've got a past that we're going to have to speak about that wears a different colour shirt, but are you available for the qualifying campaign and indeed for the Euro Championships this summer? And what's your mental disposition to the country of your heritage?
Well, yes, I would love to be available for that. Job done. I always did think if I ended up playing for Scotland, I might have got a few more caps, to be fair.
130 odd, it would have been for absolutely sure. And we'd have loved you. We'd have loved you so much. But I have to start and pay tribute to somebody who was just gigantic through your life and your career, and who patently was a man of character and good brain, and to whom you owe a lot. Your dad was born in Motherwell. Not everybody listening to this is going to know where that is, but it was a traditional blue-collar steel town, a real working town where men and women of character came from. If I talked about your dad as being down-to-earth, smart, to the point, fun, quit hard, as Motherwell characters are supposed to, am I beginning to scratch the surface of that wonderful man?
Oh, for sure. I think you've said it all there. I mean, that's a perfect way to describe him. He really was very down to earth, kept things real, which was, of course, was very good for me as I embarked on a career which, you know, lots of highs and lows. So it keeps you very grounded, especially in my early years when it felt like my career was just an upward curve of many, many, many positives. But he was always there to have a little bit of a giggle and a joke about things and keep my feet on the ground. And, you know, he was my best friend, very honest, not in terms of, you know, if I played badly or anything, he would criticise. He would just say, well, never mind, on to the next one. He knew I was a very frustrated person when playing football, especially when I used to play out wide, and always wanted to do well, always wanted to, you know, make things happen. And some games that doesn't happen and you get a little bit frustrated playing wide and you try and do too much when you do get the ball, maybe for the first time in 5 minutes, instead of just popping it off and going again and getting yourself going. And he just sometimes would just say, well, just, you know, always do the right thing. Don't force it. You know, you know what's the right thing. I mean, my dad didn't claim to have a great knowledge of the game, but I think he had a great knowledge of me and my mentality and that sort of thing. So that would always be kind of funny after games. And I would come into the players' lounge, even when I started at Portsmouth. And then on at Tottenham, my dad would sit there very calm and just say, well played today. Yeah, good effort. And then my mum would be the one sat next to him asking the 100 questions. What did the manager say? What this? So my dad ended up having a nickname for her called CFAX. In terms of every time I'd walk up and I'm shattered and my dad would like, just go and grab him a beer or go and grab him a drink, you know, let's start this interview now. It was hilarious. And she's just so excitable and loved it. Whereas my dad was such a calming influence after those games. Even with, like, I'd come out of a game sometimes, you know, fuming that, you know, how the game had gone and that, but that just calmness and reality of everything, it really helped. And I think I think about it and talk about it, the more I realise that. And I guess you take it for granted because that's how he is. But it also made you realise that, yes, football's so much, so intense. You work and train for that reason, to play on a Saturday at 3 o'clock. And that's what it's all about. When it doesn't go well, it feels awful. And that reality and that calmness that my dad had always just brought things down to, you know, back down to reality, that I'm doing the thing I love. There's going to be a game next week. You're going to go training on Monday. You'd have forgotten about it. And that really helped, especially in my early years.
I'm struck by you saying, Dan, about how well, how intimately he understood football. He knew you really well. And I suppose in situations like that, it's a little bit like having in your family, to your right-hand side, as your most trusted person, one of these things that people now go to, which is coaches who help with your psychology, who can keep you on the straight and narrow. But most people are parents, not all sportsmen and women that go on a parental. But all the parental experiences, I think, are really different. And one small example is, I was recently interviewing the Barcelona striker, Martin Brathwaite, and he said that his Guyane, his dad from Guyane, who had been brought up in New York, was ultra hard with him in Denmark, pushed him, criticised him, to the point that Martin said, I didn't feel loved. And now he realises that the things that his dad was drilling into him have benefited him. They're close as anything now. But he went through a spell where he didn't feel particularly, he felt challenged and not particularly loved. clearly what you got from your father was astute in that he knew exactly what to do to get the best out of you in good and bad circumstances, whether you're as a teenager or latterly as you're breaking through and becoming a big star.
Well, I think that really comes back to my childhood in general, in the fact that my mum and dad got divorced when I was around 10, which was a tough age. I had younger siblings, two brothers, one would have been 8, one 6, and then a sister who was the twin to the youngest at 6. So I guess I kind of grew up quickly and I knew what was going on, and my younger brothers and sisters didn't really. And my mum was leaving to, you know, and we were going with her to live with someone else at another man's house. It was not very nice. You see, the house you live in, you see your dad crying as you're leaving and that sort of thing. Fortunately, we caused such a ruckus at my mum's new place with her new partner that I think in the end it's either them or us. And my dad was still living at the same house. He didn't jump ship and go off and go and live in Spain or something like that, which he could quite easily be. He was so upset about it, but we would go to his house every day after school because the school playing field was behind our garden. And it wasn't anything against my mum. It was just one of those things that was our family home. That's where we wanted to be. And so we ended up going back to my dad's. My mum would come and cook us dinner every night, but also help show my dad how to cook a dinner. So all these things I had to watch and see my dad learn and be this person that he really wasn't. He was a removal man. He was very simple, never cooked in his life. And now he's cooking for 4 children, at an age which he, I'm sure my mum did everything up until that point. But we got the best of both worlds. I was very lucky that both my mum and dad, the way that they sorted that all out was my mum would come over every day and help cook dinner, be there, and then go off to her house and be with her new husband and partner. So we're very, very lucky because of that. But also I think at that time I then became my dad's best friend. I would sit with him every night and watch the football, or before he'd go out to work, because there was like the property crash and so the removal business went pear-shaped. He ended up being a taxi driver. So I could just sit there and talk about football with my dad all day, all night. I would play all day. And I think that was just it. I think he would never scream and shout on the sidelines watching games and that sort of thing. So, of course, for me, whenever I see that from kids and I see, or I speak to friends of talking about their kids playing and they're so into it and they're just too much, in my opinion. I just had that calming influence from my dad, A, as a kid growing up, and B, as trying to be a footballer. And throughout my career, in everything up until, unfortunately, when he passed away, he was always the first person I would speak to. And whether I felt good or bad, he always made me feel great, and that's what it was all about. And I think that comes from that, the way that he dealt with our upbringing. If you'd known him before that, there's no way he could bring up 4 kids up on his own, basically. But he did it because and that's what it comes down to. He just loved us and was everything was about us. And of course, it's very difficult as a kid trying to be a professional footballer. So many ups and downs, and his advice certainly helped.
It's an exceptional testimonial to be able to give to a parent, mother or father. It's it's brilliant to hear, because to be able to say that about a parent is wonderful. As a Scot, I mean, he and I are different, slightly different generations, but we share some traits, I'm sure. As an Asian, we tend to get a little bit more Scottish the further away we get from Scotland. And just by coincidence, again, I interviewed Scott McTominay recently, who grew up in the northwest, just outside Manchester, played all day in the garden with his dad at football, and still does to this day as a Manchester United midfielder. He said, in fact, I've got to go at the end of this interview. I've got to go and play football with my dad in the garden.
Oh, I love
which
that.
Is a nice thing to say. Now, for him and his dad, there was no question that once Scotland were interested, what they would choose, nor for you was there really any question, although you gave us the benefit of a shot and Andy Rutherford had dropped the ball. If only it had been different. But in your heart and in your soul and your idea, there was no doubt at all that if England were calling, that you were English. But again, I'm just, for the last bit about your dad, I'm interested about how Scottish he was before you become an England international, how much his hopes might have been that you might go and play for his country if it didn't feel like your country.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it's a strange one, really, because, I mean, he ended up going... he's lost his dad when he was 2, so he wouldn't have known much about him. His then stepdad was from England, and he ended up going to boarding school in Jersey, and then ended up from there moving. The family were in Southampton, so that's where he ended up being, and that's why our family is from there. But he always told me stories about how he used to play for Rangers. He'd make up these stories, and I would go on journeys with him to Scotland when he did his removals, and it would be like overnight stays, and I just loved it. And it was him and his workman, his pal John, and my dad would just tell these stories, and I believe them all, that my dad was this footballer that played for Rangers, now he scored these goals and he did this and he did that. And of course, once I started getting to 10, 11, I'm playing in football in the garden, I realised just how useless my dad was. Funny enough, when I did go up to Scotland for that trial, and I went up the night before, my dad took, my sister came as well, she was only little, we drove up, my dad took us, showed me our Ibrox and showed me Celtic Park and all that, and it was, yeah. So he didn't carp on about it in any way. I knew he was Scottish, I knew, he used to take me to watch Southampton, so I felt like that was probably like his team. But I knew that these stories and everything else, that he has a strong bond with where he was from in Scotland. So what I was so appreciative, like hopefully you can tell, about what he had done for me, not just to become a footballer and have a chance of being one, but to the way that I grew up. And, I was very spoiled to go that way because, broken families can be really tough for kids. So when the opportunity came that Graham Paddon said, look, Scotland, they've been on the phone, there's some trial, they want you to go. And I was like, oh, yeah. And for that reason solely... I mean, in hindsight, I'm glad that it didn't work out, of course. I didn't have to make that decision. But the sole reason I felt like I was doing it was a thank you to him for what he had done for me.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Conor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
I hate doing this because I've sort of mentioned two other people already, and I wasn't intending. In fact, this is typical of these interviews. You've opened up a world of adventure to me because we were listening back to maybe the second or third big interview that we did all those years ago, and it was Chrissy Waddle. And I just said to him off the top of my head, a player with whom you share ability and vision and use of the ball, and that's meant to be a big compliment because I think Chris Waddle had a lot of Brazilian genes in him. You know what I'm saying? But I said, oh, we're about the same age. Do you remember where you watched the 1966 World Cup? He said, yeah, I can tell you all about it. He said, we lived up north, just outside Newcastle. He said, me and my two brothers, three of us, my mum and dad, in an old-fashioned British motorcycle with a sidecar. And his mum's sister lived in Watford. So the five of them drove down for their summer holidays from just outside Newcastle in these newly constructed roads and waterways down to Watford to be there for the summer and to watch the World Cup final with his auntie. He said the three boys were changing positions and crawling over each other as they drove in the sidecar or whatever. That enchanted me, and thank God they made it through, because Chrissy Waddle was a gift from God for everybody who loves football. But being on the road in a massive, great, big furniture pantechnicon with your sister, your dad and his pal, sometimes up in the cab, sometimes back in the thing, and coming to strange places you've never seen before, all the noise and the shouting and the hefting, that must have been just a magical experience for a kid.
It was. Yeah, it really was. I mean, my dad always used to tell the story about how me helping usually meant I would pick a chair up and go to the front door and plonk it in the middle of the hallway in the front door. And as they come in with the big heavy stuff, they're like, someone move that chair. Darren's just dumped the chair in the middle of the hallway again. He just loved having me there. But it was fun times. It was an adventure. Exactly what it was. I absolutely loved it.
How did you end up playing for Pompey?
That would be down to him, really, because, as I said, his knowledge wasn't great of football, I didn't feel, and his talent most certainly wasn't. I mean, I've watched him kick a football back at a training game and end up breaking his toe and things like that. He was absolutely useless. And that was the... God knows where I got it from. But I was playing for the Southampton Schoolboys, which is like the under-14 teams, which is the city. And we would play every Saturday morning, and then you'd play for your club team on a Sunday. In that Southampton team, there was probably four or five of the lads were with the Southampton Academy, which was always a very good academy, a team I supported as a kid. But they would watch the games. They would come and watch the, you know, their boys playing in those games, and they never once asked me to join or do anything like that. And my dad, who obviously didn't have the greatest knowledge, I didn't think, just thought that I was on a level playing field with some of those boys, and I was, you know, I was doing pretty good. So he just called Portsmouth, and as a team, the closest team to us, spoke to Dave Hurst. He said, yeah, I'll come and watch. And I played in another game. My dad wasn't at that one. He was taking my younger brother to go and watch him play for the Southampton under 11s or something. My mum was at the game. We stood there as I came out of the change rooms after the game, and a guy came up to us and said, hi, Darren Anderson, right? I'm like, yeah. He went, said hi to my mum. He said, your dad called me this week and asked me to come and watch you play. I'm from Portsmouth. And, I think you did really good. You try and do all things the right way. Can we come around and have a chat with you this week? I'm like, yeah, of course. So that week, my mum came down to the house in the evening, and Dave Hurst came round and asked me to sign associate schoolboy forms. And that was it. It was from there. I'd go and train once a week. It was amazing. Alan Ball was the manager of the first team and would take us training on a Thursday. So to have that was incredible. Peter Osgood, Dave Thomas, who was a winger at Everton, amazing upbringing. I mean, to go and just once a week still do your fun football, play for your schools, do all that. All the boys at Southampton, they weren't allowed to play in their what I would call fun football on a Sunday. They missed out on that. I ended up getting an apprenticeship. I was the last one to get picked. We played some trial games. I was on the bench. I remember they kept saying that I wasn't strong enough. They put on a little lad in front of me in one of these games, and I came on maybe for the last 4 minutes. I was so disgruntled. I remember saying to my dad, I'm not, there's no point. What am I doing? And it was start of January, I think. And he just said, well, you got about 6 weeks of going once a week training. There'll be a couple more games. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, but you never know. And he was right. There was the last trial game, I think it was. We played against the Navy down there. Alan Ball was there watching. I played right midfield. Daryl Powell, who went on and played for Derby and Portsmouth as well, he was playing right back, and he'd already got his apprenticeship. He was one of the star boys. He was a top player. He just kept getting the ball, giving it to me. I kept doing my little bits and never give the ball away in a whole half. Alan Ball was stood on that side of the pitch where my dad was, and he knew my dad because my brother and his son played in the same Sunday team, Windsor and Southampton. So he just turned around to my dad and he said, "Your boy's got a chance. He does everything right. I mean, he's got to get stronger. He's got to, but I love it. He does everything right." And that was it. He just, from when I was thinking I wasn't going to get that opportunity, 2 days later, I signed an apprenticeship at Portsmouth. And that was it. And my dad, who, all he wanted was for me to get a chance because he just knew how much I wanted it. He knew I had ability, but on top of that, he knew how hard I worked at it. And the one thing he did have, he was a cross-country runner as a growing up. He was so, and I definitely got that gene, and I could run all day, and I would win the Hampshire cross-country championships, Hampshire and Surrey, Southern England. So I could run all day. He just felt that if I got that opportunity to go and train every day for 2 years as an apprentice in the youth team, that my ability would shine through. And he was right. I couldn't believe how much I improved from 16 to 18.
We're already identifying the character that made you such a successful sportsman, because the England-Scotland debate is one thing, but to be a Southampton boy and change to Portsmouth, people listening, people won't know. I mean, never mind what you went through. The Southampton Pompey thing is try and put it into some words or emotions, because I'd almost go so far as to say hatred.
I think it is. It's really strange. And I think the fact that they've been in different leagues at times over the years meant there were less games. So when it happened, it was even worse. It was toxic for sure. And as a Southampton boy, being a Southampton fan, I didn't really get it, because I was just a kid, and I just, yeah, I wanted Southampton to win, and then I wanted Portsmouth to win. They're two teams. I mean, no big deal. Wasn't good, you know, didn't happen, unfortunately. And I remember when I was at Portsmouth, people didn't really know who I was, so I could still be in Southampton, go out with my mates, who obviously were all Southampton fans, and we, no big deal. When I signed for Spurs, different story. First game away at Southampton, opening day of the Premier League. When the Premier League started, terrible game. I got abused left, right and centre. I remember taking a throw-in right where I used to sit. And these people who I literally sat with 4 years earlier were, I mean, they were almost spitting on me. It was unbelievable. That it was pure hatred. Franny Benali elbowed me in the last minute, 8 stitches above my eye, the biggest roar of the day. It was unreal. Unbelievable. What a debut. I was like, oh my God, this is... God, I used to think this was fun, but it was some debut. But then going on from there, I ended up, of course, playing for England and still want to come back, but every opportunity to come and see my dad and my family and friends, go out in Southampton. In the end, I had to stop doing it. It got nasty. People were pretty nasty about it all. And from that point, I ended up, when I came down, I'd go out down to Bournemouth, just get away from it, and end up buying a home there. And that's why, you know, my association with Bournemouth started then, and I ended up playing there for that reason.
Yeah, we've been down that neck of the woods to speak to Harry Redknapp and Suey a couple of times, and we just call Bournemouth and Poole the neutral zone. We've got really good fan supporters who've been with us all the time, and we've got sponsors. I'll start with one of our supporters, Will McLeod. He's a socio. Darren, Will just loves you. He's written an essay about you here. And if I take off the top of it, what a career Darren had, even if you limit it to the years he spent at Tottenham. I think his move to Spurs coincided with the back pass rule, and he left Tottenham the year after Abramovich bought Chelsea. The change in the Premier League in that span makes my head spin. I've been reading old interviews of Darren's, and I really love his candour. Even when he was still playing, he would speak his mind. So I'm hugely looking forward to the interview. My question is really threefold, and here he says, apologies for how long-winded it is, and I've taken a good chunk out of Will's question. Darren played in different roles in Spurs teams over the years and in England teams under different managers, as well as many spells at other clubs. In purely football terms, which team played the best soccer, which team did you enjoy playing in the most, and which team got the best out of you? So it is three sections. Which side were you in that played the absolute best football? Which one did you enjoy yourself most, and which team got the best out of you?
Well, I think I was very fortunate, especially with my England time, to play under Terry Venables, who is for me the best manager and coach I ever played for by a long way. Just an incredible man. I loved playing for Glenn Hoddle. The way that he got the team to play he was so far ahead of his time, I think, and it was the perfect international manager for those reasons. That World Cup team in 1998 was such a good team to play in. Of course, everyone talks about Euro 96, myself included. I loved playing for England when I first got in. I then changed Terry Venables then for Euro 96, played me as a wing-back, which was fine, but meant less protection from a defender behind me makes you feel very uncomfortable as a winger, because that's not what you're good at, but you do it. And the reason I think me and Macca were chosen in those roles was to make it an attacking formation, which it obviously was. But we're both limited in our defending ability, but both have a go. So I found that tough, no doubt about it. I most certainly enjoyed playing as a right midfielder with a right back behind me to offer that sort of protection and not feel like it was one-on-one against me. If I had a flying fullback like a Roberto Carlos or something like that, it'd be like, oh God, just get rid of it. Will you pass it, please? In terms of team I enjoyed playing in, probably the most at Spurs would probably have to be under what started as Ozzy Ardiles at the start of the 94-95 season and ended with Gerry Francis, that created the right balance of a team that played the most exciting football with exciting players. I loved it so much. I mean, Ozzy, when he brought Jürgen Klinsmann to the club, was it almost felt like it was changing football, the way that Ozzy wanted our team to play. Defensively, we just weren't good enough. We passed it and passed it. It was so different. Movement, give the ball to people, even if they're under pressure. Vinny Samways was unbelievable at that. No matter where he was on the pitch, if the crowd were booing him, it'd still give it to me. He was an unbelievable player. And things started from there. And then, of course, we had myself, Teddy, Jürgen, Nicky Barmby, what a player he was. Popescu centrally. I mean, when Gerry Francis came in, when Ozzy started, we played Sheffield Wednesday away. What a great game. We won 4-3. That's how football should be. Entertaining. Teams worked us out and worked out that if you defend properly, you can hit them on the counter-attack. That's but not because it was the famous five. There was about eight that would bomb forward. Full-backs bomb forward, midfielders, two centre-backs, Colin Calderwood sat in front, and that's it. So they worked that out. Gerry Francis came in and worked us with a rigid 4-4-2 with all that quality still. And it was a really top, top team, I think. I think if we kept that team together the following year, if I didn't start picking up the injuries of the next couple of years, that team could have definitely challenged.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Here endeth the lesson.